So we're going to move into the land of perceptual positions for a little bit. So to kind of set up for this, an important part of sensory acuity. There's two very important states to distinguish in doing NLP work, and you'll experience this in multiple ways. So one kind of, we've talked about it already a little bit, one kind of a state is when you're associated. So the term association means that you're experiencing something from within your body. So your consciousness, your awareness is in your body, you're looking out your own eyes, you're hearing with your own ears, feeling your own feelings. And that's what we call an associated state. And I'm going to map this over to these distinctions here in a minute. So when you're in your body, you will experience things differently. When you're in your body, you will tend to have more access to your own feelings, your own body sensations, your own emotions, when you're in your body. Now, a dissociated state is when you're experiencing something as if you were outside of your body. So it's like your awareness or your attention is outside of you, looking back on yourself. So you can, if you're visually, you can hear, I'm sorry, visually you can see yourself in the picture. So imagine for a moment that you could like step outside yourself and look back at yourself mentally. And you can see what you look like from outside of yourself. That's a disassociated perspective. And these are very, very important distinctions in doing lots of different NLP processes. And I want to make a slight distinction between the terms dissociation and disassociation. Can you hear the difference in those words? Dissociation, disassociation. In NLP trainings, and I can't speak for the other trainers at this point, but we tend to use those words interchangeably, even though they are different. So association and disassociation are what I just described. So you're associated in your body, or you're outside of your body looking back at yourself. So you can see yourself in that picture, or you can hear your voice over there. Disassociation. The term dissociation is a psychiatric term that means when a person develops internal splits inside. So one part is dissociated from another part. We have a parts model in NLP, and you'll learn more about how we talk about parts, inner parts. But when inner dissociation happens to an extreme, you get what used to be called multiple personality disorder or dissociative identity disorder, if any of you are familiar with those terms, where one part splits from another part inside, and they lose awareness of each other, and they operate independently of the other. So dissociation is formally a psychiatric term, a psychiatric condition. Disassociation, as we practice it in NLP, is a powerful resource. And so you can step out of yourself mentally and look at back at yourself. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, but keep in mind, you know, other practitioners and other trainers in NLP may use those terms interchangeably. So you hold the distinction inside your head. You don't necessarily need to correct them or anything like that, but just hold that distinction inside your head so you're not confused by that, okay? All right. So it's another important thing to be able to calibrate when somebody's in an associated state versus a dissociated state. So could I invite three people to come up here for a moment and help me with a little sensory acuity practice. Is that a minimal cue that you're on your way up here? Yes.
I thought you were going to get up, so I was moving out of your way.
Thank you for volunteering him.
Yeah. Okay. That worked out.
Excellent. Please. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Yeah, no worries.
You could continue walking.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Oh. Excellent. I'd say, and if you would get kind of close, like almost shoulder to shoulder, but not touching. Okay. There we go. Just a little bit more, a little bit more. There we go. Awesome. All right. So first I'm going to invite you into an associated experience. So be here right now in your body, in this room, in the present moment, looking out your eyes. Look out there and see these glorious faces out there. And be in your body. Notice what you're seeing. Notice what you're hearing. Notice what you're feeling inside your own body. And I invite you all to calibrate and notice what they look like when they're in their body, when they're associated. Okay? Notice what you're hearing. Notice what you're feeling. Notice what you're seeing being inside your body. It's okay to breathe. It's okay to move. Just notice what it's like. Okay. Big, deep breath. Did you notice how far the chair moved when the wind blew it?
No, I did not.
Oh, I didn't think so. Now, what I invite you to do is I'm going to invite you to mentally float out of your body and float to the back of the room and look back at yourself and see the three of you up here in front of the room. So you can go back there and see those three people standing up there with Larry in the front of the room. And notice what that's like to see yourself up there. Notice how that other you is standing up there, how they're breathing, how they've just moved. Notice all of those subtle little things from the back of the room. Notice what that's like. Notice your own internal experience as you look at yourself up there in front of the room, standing with Larry and your other NLP colleagues. Notice what you see, notice what you hear, notice what you feel from the back of the room as you see yourself up there. And again, we're noticing what they look like when they're in the back of the room. Big deep breath. Okay. So, what did you notice between when they were here in the front of the room versus the back of the room?
Both Sebastian and Bill really focused, and Nancy was totally looking at you. And then she finally turned and joined in and got in. And then you could see her looking to her upper right and seeing the picture and doing all that.
Is that true in your experience?
Well, yes, because I had to really see what they look like in order to picture them.
Oh, so you took a picture and then took it with you in the back of the room?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Awesome.
Yeah. I felt their eyes were blinking more, like Sebastian and Bill, when they were dissociated.
They were?
Their eye blinking certainly more.
Mm-hmm. More eye blinking when they were dissociated in the back of the room?
Than they were in the body.
When they're in the body, they're very present. They're very present. And when they're not, you can see their mind is wandering and they're off in their own world when they're in the bathroom.
So what in their behavior did you notice that would...
On the behavior?
Yeah.
It's almost like they're sleeping, like in a state of, you know, like sleepwalking when they're in the back of the room. And when they're here, you see their faces lit up, their eyes are focused, they're very attentive.
Okay, so you saw more focus in their eyes and maybe more...
So they're reacting more to what's happening. Versus there, they're just... looks like they're watching a movie and it's just a very boring movie and they're just going...
I noticed Sebastian's and Bill's eyes when they were dissociated just kind of gazing at a distance. Mm-hmm.
I had a hard time doing that, honestly. It was like, I didn't really see a lot. I tried to, it's like, this is weird, why? I never tried that before, you know, so it's like really unusual. And I felt more like, this is strenuous to do, so I can totally see that probably I did that. I didn't notice, but probably that's true.
So Sebastian, may I ask you?
No. Yes.
Sorry, you don't know. A lesson in incongruence. Okay. If you were to imagine for a moment that you were in a movie theater, okay, and there's a screen up there, mm-hmm. and up on the screen, you can see a movie of yourself standing up here. Can you picture that up over there? See that Sebastian over there on the screen?
I have a hard time doing that.
Okay.
I can try.
Okay. And what are you seeing? What are you experiencing?
It's like exercising your muscle. I'm exercising my brain. I'm trying to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I see myself, but I'm walking through a downtown.
Okay.
So
it works. It works.
I wish to be there now. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So in the movie up there, you're downtown?
Yeah.
Somewhere?
I was going by. Maybe it's New York City. Well, it's a coffee shop. Okay.
How would you describe his clothes?
Excuse me?
How would you describe his clothes?
I'm wearing the same stuff that I'm wearing.
Okay. Okay, good. All right. Take a deep breath. Come back here. Are you all in your bodies? You can be back up here?
Yeah.
All right, good. All right. So now, what did you notice when he went downtown? What was different?
Can you do it again?
Okay, more animated? More movement?
Yeah, it was fun to walk
down.
Is it similar to daydreaming? Or is it daydreaming about yourself? Is that the same as the disassociated state?
Disassociation can happen intentionally. You can do it on purpose. And sometimes it happens just automatically, kind of like daydreaming. So it might happen automatically, unconsciously. It could be either one.
But it's not the same.
Not the same. Okay.
I noticed with Bill, when he was disassociated, he kind of stood up straighter. I don't know if it was kind of just adjusted, a quick adjustment. Kind of seemed like he was seeing himself as he wanted to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So now, one of the things, again, as part of your sensory acuity practice of just noticing, just notice what you notice. Whatever you notice is good, right? In the sense of you're noticing distinctions, you're noticing differences between one versus the other. And people may express them differently. Okay? And so, again, the goal is to try to be able to tell whether or not a person is associated or dissociated. Okay? So thank you.
I was just responding to everybody here, so I was like more with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was imagining, you know, from the back of the room, it was like I was creating my own picture.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was seeing Bill as smiling and Sebastian as serious. And so I'm creating my own story rather mm-hmm. than responding to everybody else. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also an important point in the sense of when you move mentally into another perceptual position, it's ultimately an act of the imagination. And so there may be little differences like that you've created in your mind. Like you said, you're creating your own picture of that. So that's an important thing to keep in mind, that as you go through this, that it's an act of the imagination to project yourself somewhere else. So let's look at some of these distinctions. So we explore the difference, like when you're in your self position, when you're in your body looking out your eyes, that's what in NLP we sometimes refer to as first position or self position. And so you're experiencing something from within yourself. Now, when you're in a perceptual position, you have access to the information that's available in that perceptual position. The information that's available to you in that perceptual position. So when you're in your body, you have lots of availability to what's going on inside of you, to your images, the things you're seeing, the things you're hearing, the things you're feeling. So looking at it from the self position. Now, a psychological perceptual position has lots of different pieces to it. One distinction is your vantage point, which is where you're looking from, and your focal point, which is where you're looking to. Does that make sense? Vantage point, focal point. So if I'm in myself, my vantage point is here, and I might be focusing on somebody else as my focal point. Vantage point is where I'm looking from. Focal point is what I'm looking to. There's also the scope. How much of my field am I taking in? Do I have broad awareness? Like right now, I'm aware of the edges of my visual field and everything in it. I have a very broad perspective. It could also be very narrow. I could narrowly focus in on one person, you know, and get really focused. So I still have the same vantage point. I have a focal point, but my scope has narrowed. Does that make sense? So you have vantage point, focal point, scope. How much are you taking in? Now there's a lot of other distinctions I could add to this. For example, I might be going visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. So I might be paying attention to my visual experience, I might be paying attention to my auditory experience, I might be paying attention to my kinesthetic experience. Even from a vantage point and focal point, my vantage point might be inside looking inside of me. So my vantage point and my focal point are inside of me. Isn't that a trip? So my vantage point and focal point are in here somewhere. I could have it be external. So my vantage point is inside, my focal point is outside. Now, if you just take that alone, there are 12 permutations of those combinations. Okay? So inside, outside, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, broad versus narrow, that gives you 12 different states of attention. Yeah. So the distinctions are internal versus external awareness, visual, auditory, or kinesthetic awareness, and then is my attention broad, the scope is broad, or narrow? And believe it or not, I could add 6 more distinctions to that, but I'm not going to do it right now. Because we want to keep it relatively simple for now, and just think of, so self, vantage point, and where is my focal point? So we're tracking that for the moment. Now, if I mentally float out of myself and step into somebody else's shoes, as if I'm looking, I step into them and I look through their eyes, and I listen with their ears, and I feel with their feelings, that's what we call other position or second position. And this is where, you know, oftentimes we have experiences of deep empathy with another person. It's like you have a sense that you can feel what they feel, or you can relate with their experience because you've had a similar experience, perhaps. But you mentally float into them and try to experience it as much as you can from their point of view, taking on their physiology, taking on their gender, taking on their size and shape, taking on their values, their personal history, all of those different things. You become them, in a sense, with your own act of the imagination. You try to become them in your mind as much as you can. So that self position versus other position, or second position.
So if you are assuming somebody else's position, then would your vantage point be from them, even though it's still inside of you?
Right, you got it. Okay. Yeah, you've moved your vantage point into them, and you might be looking back at yourself as the focal point. Right? Can you see yourself through somebody else's perspective, is the idea. Then this third position is where you can pop out here to this third position, which is an observer position. The observer position is a neutral third, like think of it as neutral third party observer. Somebody who's unattached, uninvested in either of the other two positions. They're just cleanly observing from another perspective. It's kind of like the proverbial fly on the wall perspective, just looking at what's happening. Neutral third party observer. So each of these perceptual positions, so like right now, I could mentally float into one of you in the room, and maybe I take Aaron, and I mentally float into Aaron and look back at myself through Aaron's eyes. Now I've changed my vantage point and focal point. Vantage point is here, focal point is here. I'm looking back at myself. I could then float out of Aaron and say, maybe take a position over by that door, and go into observer position, and now I'm looking at Larry presenting in front of a group of magnificently wonderful people. Oh, sorry, that wasn't an neutral third-party perspective. I took my glasses with me over there. So this observer, this neutral third-party observer, just sees this guy talking to these people from that perspective. And so that person can see the movements of the presenter and the responses of the group and how the presenter responds to the group responds to the presenter. Neutral third party perspective. Right? So the ability mentally to shift from one perceptual position to another is a skill that involves capability and willingness to do so. So part of what you're learning here is how to do it. How do you mentally take different perceptual positions? And then there's the willingness to do it. We all know people who are stuck in self-position, right? They're stuck in their own point of view. They can't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I realized to hear more about why, how to do it and why it's really important, because I think I can benefit a lot by going out of my, I have always this same focused view.
Yeah.
Isn't that just natural differences in empathies that people have?
Yes. Yes. There's, to give you a youth corrections example, one of the things that we discovered about youth corrections is kids are often developmentally arrested because of, it could be abuse or neglect or something like that. And because of that, they don't learn certain skills as they grow up that then affect them really in limiting ways as they get older. So what happens is, and this is, comes from some work with from Piaget, who did the Three Mountains experiment. He would have kids play with this little model. It had three mountains and little toys and trucks and things like that. And they would get familiar with the whole mountain. But what would happen is they would say, now describe to me what you see. And the kids would describe what they saw from their perspective. And then we would hold up a Raggedy Ann or Raggedy Andy doll over here and ask the kids to describe what Raggedy Ann or Raggedy Andy sees. Well, up to a certain age, kids will describe, they will still describe what they're seeing. They project their own perspective into Raggedy Ann or Andy. And so they think Raggedy Ann or Raggedy Andy sees the same thing that they do. And up to a certain age, kids, they can't project themselves mentally into another perspective. But it kicks in somewhere around 3 or 4 years old, starts to kick in, and then they can start doing that. But if they're developmentally arrested, they don't get that. And that's oftentimes what happens in criminal personality, is that they get stuck here and they can't see things from their victim's perspective. And that's partially what allows them to victimize other people. They can't perceive things from the victim perspective. So that was often one of the very first things I did working with the kids, was teach them how to do it. The willingness side takes another different set of work, okay? But teaching them how to do it is exactly what we're exploring right here, right now, is how do you do that? How do you shift your focal point and your vantage point from one thing to another?
I've found sometimes I've been working on it lately, but I'll shift myself into other people's positions way too much. Like, I'll see somebody wearing something that looks really uncomfortable, and I feel bad for their body having to like be in that really. And
is that why I feel so?
No, but like through like law of attraction and stuff, like the law of allowing, it's like just allow them to do their own thing. That's been really helpful for me to just like notice when I'm jumping into somebody else's stuff and like suffering completely unnecessarily, and just like know that that's their own thing, and it has nothing to do with me. And
you know, that's a good example of, now if this became like a habitual thing, like you were mentally living in somebody else's head a lot, there's a term for that. It's called codependency, right? That if you're mentally in somebody else's business a lot, especially if it might be a family member with a problem or something like that, and you're constantly, you know, wondering what's going on with them, and if you get stuck there, you become very other referencing. So the idea is that we don't want to get stuck in any of them. We want to have the fluidity, the freedom, the flexibility to gather information, because there's valuable information that you can get from each of those perceptual positions. Now, when you're in this position, how much feeling do you think is going to be there? Okay. If you're neutral, uninvested, then you can probably have potentially cleaner observation about the dynamic of the dance between these two people. Okay, they're in a loop with each other, a communication loop. Each one is responding to the other person. And when you get outside the communication loop, that's a true third observer position.
How much of your stories are you dragging along from first to second? In other words, are you interpreting second with your stories?
It's a risk, and it does happen. that you take your glasses over here with you, right? You project your opinion. So the part of the in doing this exercise is you want to have the intent to really try to understand this position, to go over there as cleanly as you can. There's another process called aligning perceptual positions that really handles that phenomenon. But it is, it does happen. So for now, just have your intent that I really want to understand things from the other person's point of view. So you go there as best you can in your imagination. Now you still may take some of your filters with you, but so it's a practice and you can refine it and you can get better at it to make it cleaner. But it's amazing, actually. I mean, probably most of you in the room do it naturally anyway. You're able to kind of see things from another person's point of view. I don't think you'd be in the room if you were super stuck in one of those positions. I do know people who are stuck here, stuck in observer, right? They're perpetually always detached, uninvested, unemotional, you know, who, like Spock, Data, 7 of 9, okay? Do we know these people? So they're perpetually in observer position. Special case. But so there's also a fourth perceptual position that we could explore that would be the whole field of this whole relational field. And it's a we position. You actually identify with the whole system itself. That's what Robert Diltz refers to as the fourth position or the we field. So that it's the perception of the entire field together. Now, interestingly, Damon is taken on as an intent to practice that this weekend. Would you mind saying more about the fourth position, the value of the fourth position?
It's interesting that you say it, because not a whole lot you can say about it, other than what you were saying about what Robert says about it. It's an interesting position because we do experience all of these positions. You're mostly unconscious of it. So this is about bringing this into your conscious awareness. And there are times where you're involved in, say, a family or a group where you sort of have an identification with the entire system. So as I'm sitting here, I'm not putting myself in his shoes or your shoes or anyone's shoes. I'm the entire system and all the different perceptions of the system. And if I move into any one person's perspective, well, then I'm going second position, and then I have to bring myself back to fourth position, which is I am the entire system. So we already identify naturally. We have this thing inside of us that identifies with our name, where we live, our clothing, or a certain personality. So what I'm doing is taking my strategy to identify with things and using this entire group and the system that is in this room as a way of identifying with the entire system.
Is that what you're tapping into when you're giving a presentation in a room and it's a boring topic and you can just feel the energy just die for a second? And if I'm speaking, I can sometimes see the guy that's sleeping in the front row, and I just think, what am I doing? I'm jumping around these perspectives. But then when you become conscious of another speaker, there's a deadness in the room. Maybe we need to do something to raise the energy. Is that fourth perspective?
Some of it, but like the jumping around, if I find myself, and I slip out of the fourth position when I know that I've noticed myself jumping around. So that's actually second position that you're jumping around in. And so coming back to the fourth position, it's a pretty difficult position to hold because your tendency is to either identify with my perspective here or someone else's. So to take it on as one big system, I remember the first time I had a teacher who brought me up and did, I'm assuming you're going to do a demo in a moment, but she had me step into the fourth position. I wasn't expecting it. I thought my head was going to explode. Like, it was so intense. And she saw that, and she pulled me out of it because I got dizzy. So it is kind of a difficult position to hold. When you're holding it, you get a sense of an identification with the entire system, which means there's a lot of activity. And I can actually feel the activity. I can feel Larry up there walking around, and I can also feel like people's heads turning and looking, it's really hard to explain because it is very overwhelming at the same time.
Yeah, and I think there is an important element there. Is think of how wonderful that position would be for a coordinator of an event like this, that he's tracking, he's paying attention to the entire field of what's going on in the room and the dynamics of the people and me and the whole thing. It's a powerful resource. And as a presenter, I do the same thing. I'm tracking, you know, I notice every little movement that happens in the room because I can see, I've got the whole field in my perception at the same time. So there's all kinds of things going on in the room that I'm tracking so that I can be of service as we go. And that requires that fourth position, the we field.
Well, I think I heard feeling and observing. Mm-hmm. So is this person doing both? I mean, we were talking about the observer and then being in the shoes. So is this one doing both, the observing and the feeling, or more of one than the other?
The we field takes it all in. So you're feeling, you're hearing, you're seeing, so you're processing in all of the senses simultaneously. And that's partly why it's kind of a difficult position to hold.
So it's more feeling and sensing than being an outside observer.
Right, you're in it. The whole thing. Would you say, Damon, you're in it? You're not like outside the field.
No, I'm not outside.
You are the field.
If I were an observer, I would be like maybe outside the window looking at it. That's not it. It's the whole system. You know, your body is a whole system, too.
Got it. Okay. So one thing, yeah.
Can you have subgroups, or does this include like a fanatical or extremist group, or someone who doesn't look at things from their own perspective, the other person's perspective, a third party just sort of like follows a dogma, and like we're seeing reading about it every day in the news? Is that the fourth system? What is that?
The way I would put that, so metaphorically speaking, okay, so if we were in a square room and there was a window looking out into the four directions, okay, and so let's say I look out to the west and somebody's looking out to the west and they see ocean. Somebody looks out to the east and they see forest. Somebody looks out to the south and they see desert. Somebody looks out to the north. I don't know if I got my directions right there. Somebody looks out to the north and they see snow-capped mountains. Who's got the correct perspective?
Everyone.
They all do, right? They're seeing a different aspect of reality from their own window out into the world. Do any of them have the complete picture? Now, what would happen if each person at each of those windows decided that their view was the only correct view?
Okay.
Right. Start lobbing bombs at each other. Okay. So as you're looking out your window, you know, you see what you see, and if you think that that is the only view there is, or the only correct view there is, the truth with the capital T, you're going to be stuck at that window. You may be unwilling to go look out the other windows and get the complete picture of things. And I think that's what happens with extremist groups. They're stuck at a window, they're seeing the world in one way, and they think it's the only way or the true way with the capital T. They're unwilling to see the other points of view, and to suggest that there is a different or another potentially correct point of view, they just won't accept it. And that's where the battle. Yeah. Anti-fourth position,
yeah.
Perhaps.
Do you mean to say
they? Huh?
Do you mean to say they?
They?
Like
say more.
They is they don't see other points of view as opposed to we don't see other points of view.
Right.
It's just an interesting choice of words.
Well, and that's a good indication of where your vantage point and focal point might be. So that in my saying that, I'm saying that from my perspective, right? And saying in contrast to their perspective.
If only they would get it.
Right.
So I can solve this problem really quickly. So if you just understand.
Right. So the explanation, you know, is just to say that for this skill is the ability and the willingness to look at multiple perspectives is the skill we're working toward. Now, even I and many other people who, you know, do this work for a long time, I get stuck in my own perspective sometimes. Sometimes I get stuck in the other and all of that. But the beauty is when you can notice that and then have choice about it. And then you have the option to be more honoring of another person's perspective, or at the very least be understanding with it. That, you know, I really do want to understand your point of view and I'm willing to listen. And I may or may not agree, but I'm willing to understand at the very least.
I'm just trying to put it into practical perspective.
I do a lot of investigations. And when I come on the scene, I interview people. And they all come up with some different stories of what happened. And, well, I don't listen, I don't stuck with one person's idea or his perspective. I have to be in my, is a system position or something, right? Where I can see three-dimensional event, what's going on, actions and stuff, and kind of put everything together mm-hmm. and see clear picture of what really happened.
Yeah.
That's, sometimes yeah. I stuck in it, and it's very difficult.
Sure. Well, here's, so another metaphor, okay? Each of your two eyes sees a slightly different perspective on the world, right? You've got two of them, they're in different locations on your face. Okay? Each one sees a different perspective. So what happens is the information from your two eyes goes into your brain integrates them, and there's this emergent property called depth perception. So we can see in three dimensions. That's a pretty awesome thing. Now, it is possible to do that with psychological perspectives as well. That is, you can move around and you can gather information from different psychological points of view. You can integrate them in your brain, and the emergent property is insight. So that would be the going from window to window to window and getting more information, getting more of what's available out there. And then you get more insight into the situation. A lot of this work came from studying the strategies of genius. And geniuses, they consistently can take multiple descriptions of something and then integrate them in their head. And that's part of the basis for wisdom and insight, is to be able to do that. I would say that's one of the positions. So the fourth might be maybe where you're touching on is that it's the integration of all of them simultaneously. So think of like a reporter or a scientist, for example, observing something. That there's detachment, there's curiosity, there's like it's more clean observation from that position. Now, so it's not necessarily, it's more like a function than a person. That it's a trying to look at it as neutrally as you can. Is that?
Then, how is she functioning?
Oh, okay. So, yeah, well, let me ask you.
Well, that's interesting because observer, you are not connecting, you're not engaging much. An observer can file a complaint. That's, I believe, who observing some kind of violations, for example. When I go there, I have to know, I have to keep in mind rules, regulations. I have to keep in mind my ethic and diplomacy. I have to keep in mind a lot of systems and how people operate. There are policies, something else that's going on, or something that goes wrong. And I have to have a whole picture together. And I have to also see the observer why this guy is irritated or what caused him to do what he's doing.
You're gathering information from multiple points of view, and then you're integrating them. You're trying to get the whole sense, yeah.
And also intuition is a big, probably I use intuition as a major tool.
Right.
So
is
that fourth position, intuition?
Yeah.
Is that basically the fourth position?
Intuition?
Is it like intuition where you become intuitive?
I don't know.
Something I think people are kind of drilling down too hard on getting too much into people's heads, and when you actually practice it, you'll get a sense of it. You'll get a sense that you do this already, and you'll get a sense that this is how you create insight and wisdom, just as Larry was saying. And it's more about the crossing from one position into the other position with new information, and it's like, oh, it's sort of like now we're sharing it from multiple perspectives. It's not just sticking in one position and staying there, but you're breaking around.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, too, is the usefulness of this, you know, the why, you know, this is useful, is because it gives you the opportunity to gather information. That there's different of information available from each of these positions. And so you'll see things differently. You'll have different access to different feelings as you move through these. And so it helps you gather useful information when you're doing processes with people.